This is Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to what we think is episode 407. This is Bruce Williams from ShuttersIncPodcast.com.
They all blur into one anyway, Bruce.
That's right. That there is Mr. Glyn Lavender from CreativePhotoWorkshops.com.au. How are you?
Me? I am four more days left of school holidays. That's how I am.
I am feeling your pain right now.
If I've got twice as many kids, I've got twice as much pain.
Oh, mate.
I just plus they're young, so just a few minutes ago, because they wanted to sleep in the same room as each other.
Right.
And the first night, this is four nights going to me, the first night,
yeah,
nightmare, just nightmares. Yeah, just wood. So I said, if they do that again, bang, they're out.
Back into second separate
night,
rooms.
Angels.
Right.
Third night, angels. Tonight, had to go drag one out of the other room, crying, and slam her in her own room. So you understood exactly what was required for the last two nights. You were perfect. What's different tonight? Dear. Anyway.
Yeah, got to push those boundaries.
We do. How's your week been? Has it been fabulous? Has it been glorious? Has it been 7 days?
It's been 7 days that's felt like 30. Because I'm going through the same stuff. I've got a boy who's in year 12 who refuses to do any homework. Does not want to study, does not want to put in any effort whatsoever, has no interest in the HSC.
Which is the highest school certificate for those.
Yes.
Why? Was he good before? Was it just, this is like a hormonal thing? Is it just a teenage boy thing?
I think it's a little bit of everything. It's a little bit hormonal. It's a little bit coming of age. It's a little bit stretching their wings. And because he wants to go into the army, he seems to think that his HSC is not important, and we keep trying to tell him that it will be. Anyway.
Just say officer. Officer. Good pay.
Yeah.
Officer, good pay. Good pay officer, good grades.
Anyway. Don't be the grunt.
Yeah. Officer stands at the back and seven else forward when it comes to the shooting time.
Yeah.
There's lots of advantages to a good grade when it comes to
that's right. That's
military
right.
Goal.
Yeah. So how's your week been?
Oh, it's been okay with a few episodes of the YouTube stars going.
Okay.
I had to record two new episodes. So for anyone who would like to support my poor children's lack of views on YouTube, can maybe add another seven. Mm. Their YouTube channel is called Starlight 40. All right. One word, capital S, capital L.
Right.
It shows the modern world, I think, and that my youngest went out on Saturday with my wife, and the eldest went out with me. We like to do lots of one-on-one time kind of
right.
stuff. Yeah. And they were at the shops, and she bought something called a BFFs, which are these little plastic animal things,
okay.
Best friends forever, with right. her pocket money.
Right.
But she refused to open it until her sister got home so they could film the unboxing. My day, you get your new Prezi, you rip the thing to pieces.
That's it.
Immediately in the shop, as you're leaving the shop if necessary, you know. Now, let's wait till we get the lights set up so we can do the product on a box, which went for 13 minutes. But I've got to say, it was some moments of quite hilarity, and just how madcap my youngest is.
Right.
Is that the stuff like, you know, she'll pick up a pair of scissors and it's like, now, these may be sharp. And it's good to have a parental helper. And then she struggles for a couple of minutes, then she goes, I'll get my dad. Then she's trying to get the things out of the... Well, yeah, it's impossible to get stuff out of packaging these days.
Yeah.
So it's just some of the expressions of her trying to get stuff out of the packaging. There's moments of quiet hilarity to see what my day-to-day life is with this one. Then we decided that they scripted, wanted to go to the zoo to film an animal special.
Okay.
So we Melbourne Zoo has a lemur exhibit.
Oh, that's right. You were telling us about this last week.
Yeah, so we can walk through and everything else. So we scripted all this. They researched on the internet interesting facts about lemurs. And then we went in and we filmed six 6 interesting facts about lemurs. They had to do one fact each, and it was different cuts and different edits, different locations, you know, zooming in on the lemurs, getting up close, all this slow-mo video of the lemurs walking, all this sort of stuff. Then they came home. So that was our zoo trip. And then they came home and edited all the footage and put all the titles on, did everything, which is pretty cool. It's good to have. And that's been their most popular video today. I think they're up to like 90 views and 15 likes. Which is, you know, they got a bit disappointed. The first video they had put up went up to like 230.
Right.
Then it dropped back down to 70 or something.
Hey?
Well, YouTube, it showed it for a couple of days. It's been like 230 views, and then it dropped down to 70.
How can it drop back?
All I'm thinking is they must have realized that my mate Adam had it on a loop on his phone. Oh. So the same idea, doing the same view over and over and over.
Right.
That's all I'm thinking.
Yeah.
And so they looked at what the real views were versus that. So they haven't all that's going to be the creative side of the week. You know?
Good on them.
Yeah, they're certainly not shy in coming forward. You know? And whilst we're at the zoo in the lemur section, I took along the Tamron 100 to 400 because I'd never taken a photo with it. I had about 4 or 5 months, maybe 4. Had not shot an angle once. So, but here's the thing though, the thing is so small. When I went to Adelaide the other week, I picked it up and put it in my bag thinking it was the new 70 to 210, which is quite a small lens. Right. Turns out it's 100 to 400. You know?
Right.
It's quite a small lens for its focal range. And it was a great, it was fabulous for you know, especially with animals you can get reasonably close to, like the lemurs.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was doing some lovely little portraits, close up portraits and stuff. And yeah, nice and fast focusing and nice and sharp, everything you need it to be. Yeah. So, some fun with that. That was good. That was my creative outlet for the week, YouTubing and a couple of photos.
Cool.
But, nothing too dramatic.
Excellent. Well, I'm up to episode 5 of my dark table videos.
Is it getting follows? Is it getting listens?
It is getting some views. I think your girls are actually getting more views than I am, but that's okay. Yeah.
Perfect. Yeah. Plus, it's probably more interesting topics. You know, unboxing your BFF versus dark table. Maybe it's the voice. Maybe you need to have those science fiction voices over it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some special effects.
That's what it needs, yeah.
You should do a podcast, a light table podcast. I was watching some parody news show tonight, and this woman was starting. She'd been researching podcasts for the week,
right?
And she had a new podcast for every possible scenario for the week. one thing they said that the host was interviewing. I said, "Well, so what does it take to have a successful podcast?" She says, "Well, number one thing is," and he goes, "A really good idea?" She goes, no, don't be stupid. Nobody has good ideas. You need to be so delusional that you think what you're saying is worth listening to. And I copied that down for our podcast because that was just spot on. I thought that just came home just perfectly, I thought, you know.
Excellent.
And then I had this vision, this way of correcting images, how to fix all errors in photographs.
Oh, yeah.
It's probably completely not going to work because it'll show just how little I understand of the digital world.
Okay.
Stuff. But if all digital images are digital, funny enough,
yeah.
Zeros and ones,
yeah.
Those zeros and ones must have an assigned attribution to what it means. The sequence means something.
Yeah.
So if you make a mistake, surely you could just change the zeros and ones in the bit where the mistake is.
Perfect.
See, doesn't that work? You just change the zeros and ones, and all of a sudden it's no longer out of focus, it's in focus. They no longer blink, they've got their eyes open.
Yep.
You can zero one out, the ball coming out of the head.
No more blown highlights.
You don't need any content aware. You need .01 aware or something. I don't know. But I thought it had merit, Bruce. You know,
mate, that is sensational. I'll give you the next 7 days to come up with the algorithm for that, and you can share it with us next week.
The what now? The Al who? Didn't he play bass for it? Speaking of playing bass,
yeah.
I've had another little side project on the go this week of uproar and fury. My mate Sean's band.
Right.
The Root Tuesdays, a band out of Wollongong, little band out of there, just starting off. I only started at the end of last year.
Yeah.
Just recorded the first couple of songs, started doing some gigs, Really cool band. They get a letter from Ruby Tuesday's restaurants in America from lawyers suing them for $2 million.
What?
They're being sued for $2 million for using their copyright name.
Really?
Because people get confused that someone might show up to their concert in Wollongong
expecting and order feed.
McRib or something. I don't know. You know? and order the seafood platter. Yeah, and so they're being sued for $2 million.
Right.
By this chain of 550 restaurants, which no one had ever heard of, quite frankly. And the thing is, they're saying, well, you know, you've copied our name. And I'm going, but hang on a sec, where did they get their name from?
Yeah, exactly.
The Rolling Stones, they copied the name themselves, and they go, well, no, we're the only ones with the right to copy the name. So here's the weird thing. I don't know how they found them.
Yeah.
But there's a restaurant here in Melbourne called Ruby Tuesday.
Right.
They have been sued.
Yeah, right.
A band which has nothing to do with is being sued. There's another Ruby Tuesdays in South Africa and another Ruby Tuesdays in England bands.
What?
Neither of them have been sued or even approached by them.
That's bizarre.
They've been garnering some they're on a TV show on Channel 10 called The Project on Sunday night being interviewed, which set their sales of their T-shirt merchandise roaring, which is great. They've been in several newspaper articles and Radio National, and now they're starting to get some press in the US.
Right.
Yeah. I made it my job to go to every route. There's 550 restaurants, Ruby Tuesday restaurant. I went onto every one of the ones pages that I could find on Facebook and asked, why are they doing it? Why is your corporate head office suing a little band and over and every single page I could find? I'm now taking in any music friends I know in the industry in the US to see if they can get the support behind it.
Yeah, right.
So I've had a little sort of a vengeance mission this week.
So be interested to know, would that be handled through an American court or through an Australian court?
It's a thing, isn't it? Too? Yeah.
Because if it's being handled through an American court, the band could just say, stuff it. We're not coming. We're not showing up.
Yeah.
Do what you like. You know where to find us.
But the onus
is on them to actually come over here and chase them.
Their band is called, their website's rubytuesdaysmusic.com. So feel free to go there and support the band. We'd love that. They've been told they've got to hand over the rights of their website to Ruby Tuesday.
Oh.
They've got to give any monies they've raised as a band, generated as a band, to Ruby Tuesday. And they have to destroy all any merchandise.
What a crock.
They said if they've already got a new name just in case, apparently. Yeah. It'll go, they've named themselves after the company of lawyers. That's suing, which I think is gold.
As in, whatever the legal name of the law firm is.
The Levin something or other, interjection or something it's got to call themselves.
That's awesome.
So if you like music and you like some good sort of, you know, funky, jazzy kind of funk, so it's not jazz, it's groovy. I don't know music for music. I don't kind of explain it, but it's good stuff.
Right.
Go and support the band. At least, you know, like their page and send some solidarity to them. Because it's pretty bloody ridiculous.
It is absolutely ridiculous.
And you know what? I can understand it if they were called McDonald's or if they were called Kentucky Fried Chicken, which is a brand name of its own, not derived from something else.
No, I could understand it if they were calling themselves the Rolling Stones, where they're actually active in the same industry and using the name of a much higher profile entity. But the fact that they're a music outfit and supposedly being sued by a restaurant chain on the other side of the planet, that is ridiculous.
And the restaurant's Ruby Tuesday. They're Ruby Tuesdays. So it's not. But
that should be the end of the argument right there.
And it's named after their song, the Ruby Tuesday's Blues.
Right.
Which they wrote in homage to the Rolling Stones, which is where the inspiration for the band, which is where Bob Hope, apparently, the great Bob Hope, suggested the name Ruby Tuesday to the founder, one of the founders of the Ruby Tuesday restaurant chain back in the 60s or 70s.
Right.
And that's where the name came from. So it's completely derived. I'm sure at no time have they ever paid a single cent to the Rolling Stones in licensing the name.
Yeah. The S on the end is going to be the death knell for their case.
Well, who knows?
Because it's not a direct ripoff.
But if you, well, if you started a restaurant chain called McDonald's with a big yellow arch, I've got a feeling the S might not be that important in that particular lack thereof.
Sure. But that's comes back to what I was saying about being in the same industry as a higher profile entity. So, yeah, nah, that, they'll be fine. They'll be fine.
It's just
crazy.
So I felt quite outraged this week.
Yeah.
And you know, with fair reason, I think, and for my mate Sean, because he's a really good guy, you know.
Yeah.
And yeah, they don't. He's a high school teacher, for God's sake.
Right.
He's a high school teacher, and he's his own little music business where he teaches kids guitar.
Yeah.
Bloody good player, I might add. But
and definitely does not have $2 million to his name.
No. And they've quite embarrassingly said every article about them has talked about how penniless they are and bankrupt. And so it's but yeah.
They're Australian musicians. It goes without saying.
But they're saying on one, they've been interviewed for a place in America, and said people have bought shirts from all over Australia and now starting getting shirt orders from overseas, which is pretty good.
That's awesome.
But there's a thing there where in the letter from the lawyers saying many artists pay tribute to other artists through imitation. When it comes to imitating famous trademarks, only Ruby Tuesdays is entitled to the goodwill of its mark. In fact, the knowing adoption of a mark intending to play off a well-established mark is among the most egregious of trademark violations, warranting courts to apply the harshest of consequences. Artists may pay tribute to other artists through imitation, but when it comes to imitating famous trademarks, only Ruby Tuesdays is entitled to the goodwill. What?
Yeah, where do they get off with that?
So I've asked all my friends in America to boycott the restaurant. Do whatever little bit I can. crazy stuff. So
that is just silly.
Yeah, I know. So next time they're in town, I'm going to photograph them and make them all have restaurant meals in front of them or something like that. And, nice. They've got all their menus online, so I'll print out one of their menus and have them all. Should we talk some photography?
Why not?
Shall we?
Why not?
No, let's give it a shot. See how we go.
A couple of weeks ago, you were talking about JPEG 2000 and about how, you know, 400 weeks ago, you know, or whatever it was, how this format had not really taken off. And I was in the process of recording one of my Darktable videos and happened to notice that JPEG 2000 is one of the export options from Darktable. And I noticed that it said beside JPEG 2000 in brackets, 12-bit. And I thought, wow, that's interesting. I didn't realize that JPEG 2000 was anything greater than an 8-bit format, which is what JPEG is.
Is it?
Yeah, so I got a little bit interested in that. And so I decided to do some testing, just exporting an image out of Darktable as both a JPEG and as a JPEG 2000 at quality 95. So almost, you know, as little compression as was possible.
Yeah.
And what was really amazing was the difference in file size. The standard JPEG came out at 1.7 meg. The JPEG 2000 came out at 12.4 megabytes.
Really?
Which I thought, wow, that's a really radical difference. It's no wonder it never took off. But then I tried changing it to a quality value of 50. So, you know, half as much compression as was possible. And with that, the results were much closer. JPEG was 297 kilobytes. JP2, which is the JPEG 2000 format, came out at 594. So just over
double.
About double the size, which was certainly better than six times the size as it was at the higher quality.
That's but interesting, isn't it?
It is very interesting. And apparently JPEG 2000 had much better capacity to deal with tonal gradations at high compression levels, where normal JPEG, you get that sort of real nasty banding. Yeah. I don't know. It's kind of a shame that it didn't take off now that I've read up a little bit about
especially it. Especially now, since storage is so cheap.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, and the internet is so much faster that, you know, sending a bigger file is not such a big issue these days.
Yeah.
Unless you could send, you know, thousands of them, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. But it seems like PNG has become more of the, you know, the de facto replacement for JPEG for people who want something better than JPEG. And so it sort of looks like JPEG 2000 is dead in the water, which is kind of a shame. But anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. David Marland sent us an email. Said, hi, Bruce.
A proud supporter of my daughter's YouTube channel, I might add. Thank you, David.
Good on you, David. Hi, Bruce and Glenn. Thought these would be of interest. Three men lay dying in front of him. Instead of helping, this man took selfies. David Marland, that trend, that was kickstarted by Glenn.
What? No, wait, what? Who was dying in front of me that I took selfies?
Oh, no, Dave. No, he was dying behind you.
He was in front of me. It's just completely different.
I think we should call them Glelfies.
we'll
start a new trend.
So why were they dying?
They'd been in a car accident. And so they're lying on the road bleeding out, and this guy's taking selfies with them in the background.
But if you can't help them. I'm not saying sorry.
He couldn't help them because he was busy with his camera.
He can't be blamed for not being able to render assistance if he has no ability to assist.
Sure.
Okay, other than comfort. So let's not chastise him for not, because there's a whole bunch of other people standing there looking at him as well, who's doing nothing. Yeah. And I've got to say, having seen my fair share of these sort of incidents over there, no one does anything because there's nothing they can do. And the chance of getting an ambulance to you anytime soon because the traffic is forget about it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and, you know, and the same thing happened at the Commonwealth Games here, when this an athlete fell over and collapsed on a bridge, and no one's helping, everyone's taking photos of him.
Yeah, right. Not unique to India.
Not unique to, I reckon that'd be, everywhere in the world. Yeah, every time there's a major accident, if Lady Di's accident happened now.
Oh, it'd be worse than it was.
Everyone would be there with their phones, and no one would be there helping. They'd all be filming to say, yep. I was there.
Yeah, live streaming.
I knew the world had changed when, I think it was the last Pope that died. There was a photo that showed a photo of him lying in state, surrounded by people, and every single one of them was holding a phone up above their heads, taking photos of
the dead. And they've got their back to the coffin, yeah.
Yeah, that's a sign right there, that the sanctity of death even is, it's not so much about the person, it's, hey, I was there at this moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, and yeah. I think there's a little bit to be said about the, I was there as part of history, as opposed to, oh, look at the dead person.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I think there's a little something in the psyche about that, and I'm recording myself here in this moment.
Yeah.
So hopefully there's something a little bit more humane, a little bit more humanity in the action than just plain selflessness, but who knows?
Mm-hmm.
Or I should call it selfiness.
The second link that David had was, and here is another one from India I spotted earlier in the year, and this is a story of Indian teenagers die taking selfies with an oncoming train. And this was one of those cases of they were standing in the middle of the two tracks and were paying attention to the train that was coming towards them and weren't paying attention to what was happening on the opposite track coming from behind them, which happened to be another train. And, it's not the way to do selfies, people.
They IKEA'd themselves.
Flat pack.
Yeah.
And he said as a third one, said, Glenn, next time you visit the Taj, you may want a color correction filter. And this is apparently a story that the authorities in India are concerned that the government is failing to protect the Taj Mahal and that it's changing color. But in the body of the text, it says that the reasons for the changing of color were pollution, construction, and insect dung.
Whoa.
Well, I don't think you're going to be able to... exactly. I don't think you're going to be able to do much about the insects.
You could spray the place.
Put a bloody big mozzie net over the Taj Mahal.
Huge mozzie net.
I don't know. I'm not sure that the pollution is really anything from the tourists. It'd be more the airborne pollution from industry, wouldn't it?
Well, last time I was there, the pollution was so bad towards the end of our trip that a few people were starting to have respiratory problems.
Right.
This is, even though back in, this is in Varanasi and Delhi, but it goes cross country. But then someone sent me a photo of the Taj that when they were there, this is like a week after we were there, and the sky is completely yellow I mean, you can hardly see the Taj. Right. It's just this massive storm, and the whole country is beset by this disgusting yellow smog, basically.
Right.
Schools are closed down, roads were closed down. So, yeah, there's a fair bit of pollution.
And is all of this airborne pollution the result of windy tourists who can't handle Indian curry?
No, there's nothing to do with that at all.
So really, blaming the pollution and the insect dung and the construction has really got nothing to do with the tourism.
Yeah, I think they've got bigger problems. Yeah. Yeah. Bigger problems than 10,000 people a day visiting the site.
Exactly.
Anyway. But see, when it's 10,000 people visiting the site and rubbing their hands along as they walk along, that's going to have an effect.
Oh, for sure.
Up to about 6-7 foot high, it's going to be yellow down the bottom and whiter at the top.
Yeah.
But I got to say, it looked pretty... I mean, they're cleaning it all the time.
Yeah.
You know?
As you would have to.
I've got a bit of the Taj Mahal here in my house, actually.
Have you?
A bit of the marble.
You knocked a piece off?
Well, not quite. But they were doing some reconstruction work on some part of the Taj Mahal.
Right.
And there's these off-cut bits of marble that they've been using. So I picked up a bit of the off-cut.
Oh, right. Nice.
But it's from the same quarry as where they originally got the materials for the Taj Mahal. So
wow.
It's fine to Taj Mahal. It's just a little bit of rock, but it's kind of cool.
Nice. Steve Peters sent us a link to a video which is only on Facebook as far as I know. So for those people who don't use Facebook, my apologies.
Skip ahead.
Very
just
interesting.
Just to the end of the show, you'll find it much more interesting.
But interesting story of a guy who was born with only half of his arms and no legs, and he has made it his life's mission to be a photographer. And it's just incredible to watch this guy overcome adversity and to manipulate a camera with the limited limb, you know, usage that he has.
Yeah.
He's got a little go-kart that he built that he's able to drive. You know, he's obviously got a license and got it road registered and whatever. I wasn't sure what country it was in. It looked like Southeast Asia, but I don't know where. But, absolutely phenomenal story. So thank you for that one, Steve. And Steve sent us one, chart of the day, how the iPhone killed big camera.
Big camera.
Yes.
As in,
you know, how you talk about big industry. It's basically big camera, as in and the industry of big cameras. So, and the graph shows just the incredible uptake of the iPhone from its introduction in 2007 to 2017. So in the 11 years that it's been out, the graph is very close to vertical compared with other camera shipments, which have been in severe decline ever since, which we knew. I mean, I don't think that's telling us anything we weren't aware of, but it's pretty scary when you look at the graph.
Yeah, it shows how much little money there is in the industry still there, you know, as well.
Yeah.
Cool.
And Adam sent us some stories. This first one, I'm pretty sure we've seen, if not this story, then something very similar to
it. Similar versions, yeah.
Yeah, NVIDIA trains AI to remove noise and watermarks by looking only at corrupted photos. This is another one of those instances where the supposedly corrupted image is so obviously been messed with that you kind of go, well, that doesn't represent reality. You know,
they're showing how bad it could be and how much better you can make it.
I'm skeptical. I'm sorry. Oh. But anyway.
Maybe this NVIDIA people could come out with an algorithm.
Yeah.
Where it changes the zeros and
just
ones.
Just fix all the zeros and the ones.
That's all it needs. Going back to that idea, oh, I don't like a red top, let's make it blue. Change the zeros and ones.
Yeah, there we go.
Damn simple. Oh, I don't like her eye colour. 0-1. Add a couple more zeros. Look, they're the green.
That's lovely. It.
You know, this is the solution to everything. Mate, I want a hair longer.
You have absolutely nailed it. I hope you've patented this idea.
I came up with it over dinner, so right. I'll have to work on it somewise.
You better go and register the domain fixing the zeros and ones straight away.
DigiFix.
There we go. The next one was the Nikon P1000 has a, wait for it, 24 to 3000 millimeter equivalent lens.
Yeah, it's useful, isn't it?
That is sensational. So the Nikon P900 had an 83 times zoom, which we thought was pretty impressive. Nikon's just announced the Coolpix P100, the new undisputed powerhouse of super zooms. It packs a ridiculous 125x zoom lens with the 35mm equivalent of 24-3000mm. So I'm not sure. I'm assuming it's APS-C sensor or maybe
even smaller.
Probably smaller. Yeah, wow. That is just
size of a baby's
crazy
fingernail.
Yeah, probably.
one thing I did, I can't remember where I was. I was somewhere with someone with one of these mega zoom cameras.
Yeah.
Because they like birds, bird photography, but not much into photography, but like taking photos of birds. Hmm. And I said, well, yeah, because at 3,000 mil, you can have a hard time finding anything, letting alone keeping it, if it moves, finding it again.
Yeah.
You might be like, but she goes, oh, look, hers was only, it was only like an 800 mil lens or something. It wasn't massive.
Right.
Yeah, only. But once her maximum zoom, if they lose sight, they can press a button. It kind of zooms out.
Right.
They can locate the subject again, take the finger off the button, and zoom back to where it was.
Oh, wow.
Which is a pretty cool feature. That's a very smart idea,
I thought.
But I just don't think, I'd just be very dubious as to what sort of quality you're pulling out at 3,000 mil.
Well,
and what kind of usability? I mean, look at the video cameras
at the bottom end of this Petapixel article. There is a YouTube video with this P1. Hang on, that says P1000. The blog text said P100, so I'm not sure which it is. P1000. So obviously, a bit of the text is missing a zero. Coolpix P1000 Moon filmed in 4K at 3,000 millimeter.
Yeah, that's video. Show me a photo.
Well, yeah, okay. That'll probably be on DP review pretty soon, but
no, that can't take good photos, so you wouldn't trust it.
Further down.
When I get on a hobby horse, I stick to it, don't I?
You
I
mean, do. So there's a couple of videos, and there's some photos at the bottom of the post, but I don't think they've gone all the way to 3,000 mil, but maybe they have. Who knows? Yeah. So that's that one. The next one that Adam sent us is 16 of the best apps for landscape photography. And he said this would be no good to Glenn. dear. So there's a mixture of apps here. Some are iOS only, some are Android, some are both. So, yeah, whole bunch of stuff there. I can see just by looking at the icons at the top of the blog post that some of those apps I've already got on my phone.
Yeah.
Things like the Photographer's Ephemeris, Google Drive, Google Earth, Google Maps. Yeah. So, anyway.
They don't seem to have one. They probably don't. I'm just not looking at it properly. That shows where the light is going to be at any.
That'd be the Photographer's Ephemeris. That's pretty good at that sort of stuff.
Does that show you like a three-dimensional map of where you're standing and what the light's going to be like at different times of the day?
Not quite. Not 3D, no, but does 2D in the sense that it'll show you. You can drop a pin on the map and it will then draw lines to show you what angle the sun will be arriving when it comes over the horizon and what angle it'll set at and the times of day it'll, you know, rise and set.
Different spots. Does it show you, like, what it's going to be at, like, at 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock?
I don't think so.
Okay, because, I mean, I find that if you're going to go plan a photo walk, as an example, through a city or something, having to knowing where the light's going to be going down streets at certain times of the day is really handy. So I use one called Sunseeker.
Yeah, right.
Sunseeker gives you, it'll show you, I'm in this city, and on this particular day, if the sun comes up, not comes up, but can be seen, the light's going to be, the light's coming from this way, and the shadows are going to be here. This time, you can do it dial up any time of the day.
Right.
And it'll show you all the way through the day. So you can see during the, okay, if I walk this way in the morning, I'm going to get some beautiful light coming down this street, and then a little bit this afternoon if I go down this street, and you can plan an entire day.
Yep.
And you can do this days, weeks in advance.
Yep.
You can dial up, I'm going to be in this city on this day. What's the light going to be like? And you can plan everything as to where's going to be good places to shoot.
Yeah, nice.
I find that's obviously going to be handy for landscapes and any sort of.
Yeah. And really street photography.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So knowing where the light's going to be and where it's not going to be on a given day is pretty cool.
Yeah, nice. And that's it for me. What have you got?
Two-thirds of sweet. Well, that's it. There's a comet coming, Bruce.
Is there?
Well, so it's already here, but it's not showing up too much yet. Right. There's going to be a comet coming around. It was going to be seen here in Australia early August, early to mid-August.
Okay.
possibly visible with the naked eye.
Yeah.
Which therefore means great photo opportunities. So early morning, early in the AMs, coming up to mid-August. So keep an eye on your local presses and stuff like that. It's the first time it's been through the solar system, so they have no idea what it's going to do.
Wow.
But on July 2nd, it exploded to 16 times its brightness.
Wow.
In one day. It's the explosion was twice as wide as Jupiter.
Whoa.
As far as the space it takes in the sky.
Yeah.
And to a quarter of a million kilometer long tail already.
Wow.
And it's glowing green, which is pretty cool.
Nice.
So there's a chance for a pretty cool comet coming through. So there's a good opportunity to, you know, get some cool photography of that if it happens to come past.
And if you're a little bit of a procrastinator, don't. Simply because it won't be here again for another 200 years.
Yeah, don't. But there's another, an even better one coming in November, apparently.
Oh, really? So
that might be visible to the naked eye as well. So,
wow.
This is more predictable. It's only like every 6 years this one comes around. So,
yeah, right.
But this one, it was only discovered at the end of last year and coming into the surface. So that's pretty cool. We talked last week about the court case, about the fair use.
Which fair use was that?
Yeah, the fair use one with the guy who had his street scene taken and
sued.
There's an article here by a copyright lawyer who discrediting the court's idea of what fair use is and how they got it wrong. So anyone who found that article interesting will, I'm sure, find this follow-up by someone more in the know interesting as well.
Right.
However, I zoned out after like a minute, but, you know. If that sort of stuff interests you, I'm sure the follow up would be just as interesting.
Yeah,
and here was a kind of a bit of a weird one. I thought the U.S. Postal Service is being sued for using an image they bought off Getty Image Library.
What?
And licensed for a stamp. It's of the face of the Statue of Liberty.
Yeah,
but the photo they used is actually of the replica one in Las Vegas.
Really?
But they didn't know that. It looks close enough. But here's the weird thing. They've done the right thing. They've gone to an established
stock image library. House.
They've licensed the image for $1,500, which doesn't seem very much for use. But they acquired the license. And then the guy who took the photo, and they didn't attribute the work to him. But if you're licensing an image, I don't need to see why you'd have to.
No. If you're buying it.
Stock library, you don't necessarily have a lot of say with what's going to happen to your image.
No, and I would say that the onus is on Getty to make sure that all of those I's are dotted and T's are crossed so that the person buying the image is not on the receiving end of a lawsuit.
Exactly. So this guy's suing them. And he only became aware after his wife purchased a book of stamps with the photo. But here's the thing. I thought, well, if you put images on stock library, you don't like the end use of them, how are you covered? Yeah. Are you not covered? There's a lot of weird sort of stuff going on with that. Yeah, as far as implications, I should say, of what could happen with your images on stock libraries. And as you say, Getty realistically should have covered all
the bases. So I would imagine, you know, because the final paragraph of this story says the Postal Service sold 4.9 billion stamps, bringing in $2.1 billion in revenue and more than $70 million in profits. In its ruling, the court determined that Davidson is owed $3,554,946.95 in actual damages for the unauthorized use. USPS has not issued a statement on the ruling. I would imagine that if they've lost, their next move will be to then sue Getty Images for not having covered them.
But if I was the guy who made the statue of the Statue of Liberty for Vegas, I would sue this guy for unauthorized use of taking a photo of my product.
Yep.
It's like me going out photographing a can of baked beans and selling that. You know, it opens up this whole other avenue of lawsuits and who's there. That means every time you take a photo of a piece of architecture.
Yep.
Realistically, are you allowed to?
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, and this is what happened with this squirrely project I've been doing. Well, I took this an image I really liked, but it had graffiti in it. They didn't want to use it because the graffiti is copyright.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it becomes ludicrous. Hey, you've taken a photograph of a casino, basically, and you haven't asked their permission to take the photo. You haven't asked their permission to put the photo online. you know.
and sell it to a stock library at that.
Sell it commercially, you know. So I'd be suing him. I'd go straight back. Right, dude, you know. I thought that was interesting anyway.
Man.
There's 287 comments. I haven't so I'm just having a look at the, looking at the first thing is Google Earth owes me a bunch because of the pictures of my house.
Nice.
Oh, nice. Anyway.
And your last story about the vloggers.
So remember, I think it was a year or so ago, two Instagram nutters got into big trouble because they're in Yosemite and they walked out on the blowhole. Remember that?
No.
These guys walked out on this salt lake or whatever, and they were photographed. They photographed themselves, and there's a big uproar in the photo community.
Oh, yes, I do remember it. Yep.
Yeah, so these two, and then they got found that they'd gone into all other sort of places and done the wrong thing and got fined for all those things as well. They fell off a waterfall.
Oh, is it the same mob?
Same mob who killed, fallen off a waterfall.
Right.
Yeah, so, well, one of them fell off, and the other two jumped in to try and save them. They all went over the edge. With danger, but, yeah, I guess you're... You don't get blown up by a blowhole. You're going to get got sometime, I guess. And this is the thing. All these people going standing on these stupid spots to try and get the ideal Instagram image.
Yeah.
And we're seeing more and more, aren't we? Everyone's – this is – I was talking to Mark Watson from Insight Images, I-N-C-I-T-E.
Okay.
Who does all the – those guys who jump on motorbikes and do crazy stuff.
Okay, like Nitro Circus?
I think it might be, or one of those variations.
Yep.
But he says, just to get the crowd to even go, ooh, these days, the guys have got to do these more and more absolutely outrageous stunts, more and more life-threatening, where before, a simple double backflip, people would be off their seats. Now it's like, seen it many times. Well, that's what's going to happen with all these Instagram people.
Yeah.
How many, all these people who balance on the edges of skyscrapers or do handstands.
Yeah.
Well, soon it's going to have no impact because we've seen it all a million times, so they're going to have to do more and more crazy stuff, which means more and more people are going to die.
Yeah.
Just this stupid bit of fame. So it looks like they got their Darwin Award anyway, at least.
That's right.
Condolences to the family, of course, but still, doing stupid stuff.
Absolutely.
That's it. That's it for me, my friend. That is it in a bit.
Fantastic.
And, yeah, we've been fabulous this week. I'd like to say you've done a great job.
You'd like to.
No, I'll even say you've done a great job this week, Bruce. I'm proud of you. You sounded good. Your vocals were great. You were strong. Your performance was good all the way through. You kept it up. The stamina was there. Yeah. Pat on the back, dude. Pat on the back.
Thank you.
Get back to your movie.
Right. one thing I do want to say before we close off is I want to...
I've got one thing too. So you can either do your one thing after my one thing. Or do my one thing and then do your – or I'll do your one thing after my – you know what I'm saying.
Give us what did you want to wrap up with?
Did you put crickets?
I did.
Did you really?
Yes.
Fabulous. There you go.
I think we even got a comment about it on the blog.
I did see something about comment and then reply.
Oh, no. That was David Kembry on Facebook. But, no, actually on the comment on the blog post on ShuttersIncPodcast.com.
David Bob.
Yes, mate. That's how the podcast goes out.
Really? I'll do this on iTunes. Not on iTunes?
It is on iTunes.
I wonder if only got seven listeners if it's only going out in the blog or seven
No. It's on iTunes.
People saying it's out. No wonder we're not getting any more listeners.
But the one thing I did want to wrap up with was I want our listeners to submit photos.
Oh, yes.
We want to see what you guys are shooting. Doesn't matter what it is. If it floated your boat through the week, send us a copy.
I won't say anything about them.
No. And if he does, I'll edit it out.
It's good I get to vent, but still not have to.
That's right.
Awesome.
But not have to be held accountable for it.
what really annoys me is my daughter's YouTube channel is already getting more views than we've got listeners to our podcast after 400 episodes.
Yeah, dear. All right, mate. Well, you have a good week.
Thanks, mate. Take care, everybody.
See ya.
See ya.
ShuttersIncPodcast.com.
AnotherAudioTo.com quality podcast.
For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@ShuttersIncPodcast.com.